From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
It strikes me that one of the things that I think a lot of people would like to see, what I would like to see, is George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and the rest of these crew on trial.
William Rivers Pitt, author of War on Iraq, What Team Bush Doesn't Want You to Know, and Our Flag Too, The Paradox of Patriotism.
This administration is a smash-and-grab robbery writ large. That is their whole reason for being. They saw all of that money sitting in the Treasury, and they said, I want it. And now they got it. $87 billion. We got Dick Cheney out today saying, probably going to need more.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Up to 14 Palestinians were killed yesterday following what the Israeli newspaper Haaretz described as an unprecedented wave of Israeli attacks in Gaza. As many as 100 people were wounded in a series of five gunship attacks. Following the raids, the leaders of Hamas and Islamic Jihad pledged to retaliate against Israel. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat called on the international community to condemn the attacks. There was some opposition to the Israeli attacks, even within Ariel Sharon's own government. National Infrastructure Minister Yosef Peretzky said Israel should apologize for the civilian casualties and compensate the victims. In the deadliest attack, helicopters fired missiles at a car owned by a senior member of Hamas inside the Nusayrat refugee camp. The initial attack is said to have killed the car's four passengers. Haaretz reports that dozens of Palestinians, including medical workers, rushed to the burning vehicle. Then two more missiles were fired, killing five civilians, including a doctor. Some 50 people were injured in that attack alone. Haaretz reports a total of 14 Palestinians killed Monday. Other news agencies put the total at 11. Human Rights Watch has found U.S. forces have killed at least 94 civilians in Baghdad over the past 6 months, but the U.S. has failed to investigate all but five of the incidents. The Human Rights Group has concluded this has encouraged soldiers to believe they can fire at civilians in Iraq with impunity. The U.S. Army has begun investigating complaints that sick and wounded veterans from Iraq have been forced to be housed in makeshift hot cement barracks and have been forced to wait weeks to see a doctor. At Fort Stewart, Georgia, troops have been kept in temporary barracks that lack indoor bathrooms. One veteran, U.S. Sergeant Willie Buckles, said he's been trying to find out since May the cause of his abdominal pain. Buckles told UPI, quote, I've loved the Army. I've served the Army faithfully, and I've done everything the Army has asked me to do. Now my whole idea about the U.S. Army has changed. I'm treated like a third-class citizen. Sources within the Bush administration are now saying they've uncovered evidence that Syrian banks are holding $3 billion that once belonged to Saddam Hussein's government. The New York Times reports Syria so far refused to cooperate with an investigation being carried out by the Treasury Department. The accused mastermind in the Washington area sniper case, John Muhammad, yesterday fired his lawyers and presented his own opening arguments. The New York Times described his argument as, quote, rambling, but at times forceful. He denied any role in the shootings. A new ABC Washington Post poll has found two out of three Americans now back universal health care. In addition, the poll found 54% of Americans are dissatisfied with the nation's health system, and 70% said Americans should be allowed to buy prescription drugs outside the United States. In Switzerland, the nationalist anti-immigrant Swiss People's Party has won the most votes in parliamentary elections held on Sunday and now holds the most seats in the National Congress. And the White House yesterday announced the federal budget deficit for this year has grown to a record $374 billion. But White House officials attempted to put the news in a positive light by saying the original deficit projection was $75 billion worse.
Rulers of the nations, as you fuss and fight over who owns this or that and who has the right to design, build, sell, and store and fire all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware. Who's dying for your freedom in this land? Who pays the cost for the liberties you demand? Is it for freedom or our comfort and convenience? Is it to profit for big business we pledge our allegiance? Are we prisoners in the land of the brave and the bold, held by indifference or hearts grown hard and cold?
Sarah Thompson. Is it for freedom here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. Today we're going to spend the hour with William Rivers Pitt, the acclaimed young author and political analyst from Boston. His first book was War on Iraq, What Team Bush Doesn't Want You to Know. It was a conversation with the former UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter. It's already been translated into 12 languages. His newest book is called Our Flag 2, The Paradox of Patriotism. He spoke recently in Houston at a fundraiser for Pacifica Station KPFT. This is William Rivers Pitt.
It strikes me that one of the things that I think a lot of people would like to see, what I would like to see, is George Bush, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, and the rest of these crew on trial. Put them in the dock, put the questions to them, find us a prosecuting attorney. Does that sound about right to you? So I propose we spend this fine evening in this fine restaurant doing exactly that. Let's put them on trial. What do you say? My name is William Rivers Pitt. I will be the prosecuting attorney this evening. The case is the people of the United States versus George W. Bush et al. The charges are dereliction of duty, fraud, grand larceny, and murder in the first degree. And the question is, have we been lied to? We can all say, yeah, definitely we've been lied to. I think that we're mostly in agreement about that. But let us, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, hi there. See, you're the reason we're here. Let us look at the evidence. Let me get my ashtray off the evidence. Start five or six different layers here. First of all, the justification. I would say that the charges that we are dealing with here have to do first and foremost, we could go in 10 different directions, but I would like to focus tonight on the war in Iraq and the justification that was put forth by the administration. People's Exhibit A, a page on the White House's own website, whitehouse.gov, called Disarm Saddam Hussein. How many of you have seen this? It's there. It's still there. And it lists the reasons for going to war on Iraq. Not the new reasons, not the happy reasons, not the, yay, you know, we're victorious and mission accomplished and we're there because he was a bad person. No, the reasons we were told for months and months and months. 38,000 liters of anthrax, 26,000 liters of botulinum toxin, 500 tons of sarin, VX, and mustard gas. For those of you without your calculators, 500 tons is 1 million pounds. Hide that for me. 30,000 munitions capable of delivering these things. Mobile weapons labs termed Winnebagos of Death by Colin Powell. He actually said that in public, before the United Nations, no less. He did. Yeah, that was my favorite part. And most importantly, connections to Al-Qaeda that led directly to the attacks of September 11th. Was this true? Well, let the evidence stand on its own. We have found nothing. The mobile weapons labs were, they weren't destroyed. They were weather balloon platforms sold to Iraq by the British in the 1980s during the Reagan administration. So there's that. Also featured prominently on this page is the sentence that was used in Bush's State of the Union address that the Iraqi regime was attempting to procure uranium from Niger for use in a weapons program. That was a lie so profound that we look like fools before the rest of the world. None of the weapons themselves have been found. The Al-Qaeda connections have not been found, although in a grisly, grisly irony, Iraq is now what it was not 6 months ago, a breeding ground for Al-Qaeda terrorism. We made exactly what we lied about to go and destroy. So where's my evidence of this? Where's my evidence of the lying? Well, I give you People's Exhibit B, CIA Director George Tenet. George Tenet showed up on television several Fridays ago and on the front page of the New York Times and said, it's my fault that big fib wound up in the State of the Union address. It's my fault. I did it. Those 16 words were my fault. I never told the White House not to use that. It's my fault. So it was a clerical error. It was an intelligence screw-up. I would have told the administration, had I been given the opportunity, that possibly the stupidest thing they could ever do is try to scapegoat the CIA. But they tried to scapegoat the CIA, which is why the Washington Post, here is People's Exhibit C, Washington Post writer Walter Pincus. Now, if you are at all, I mean, you read the Washington Post editorial board, and me, myself, I want to run my head through a wall. Because they've got a guy named Walter Pincus writing for the Washington Post, but apparently don't read anything that he publishes. Walter Pincus is the CIA's man at the Washington Post, has been since the Iran-Contra scandal. Whenever the CIA wants to get something out in public, they get Walter Pincus to write it for them. He's their guy. So that Friday, George Tenet falls on the sword and says, oh, it's my fault, the uranium Niger story got into that. Don't blame George, don't blame anybody, it's my fault. Walter Pincus comes out on Saturday morning, the Washington Post, with an article saying that George Tenet went to the White House personally in October, 4 months before the speech was given, and warned them personally not to use that material in the speech. It was a lie. It was one of many. So, we have the weapons lies. We have the Iraq uranium lies, which Joseph Wilson, if any of you have been paying any attention to him, was yelling and screaming about for months and months and months. For those who don't know, he would be one of the main witnesses in the prosecution. Joseph Wilson was an ambassador who got asked specifically Dick Cheney asked the CIA to check it out. The CIA sent Joseph Wilson down to Niger. Joseph Wilson went down to Niger in February of 2002, looked at the evidence and said, this is crap. You know, it's crude forgeries. The document itself that was supposedly dictating all of this had a name on the letterhead of a representative for the Niger government that hadn't been in power for 10 years. So people who think that the folks in this administration are evil geniuses just haven't been paying attention. But probably the most important and the most emotive story, beyond the 16 words and the nuclear weapons, which was scary as hell. How many of you, show of hands, how many of you were made nervous by even the outside concept of a country? Like you were told that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons, that they have, and it's new clearer. I'm an English teacher. I was. That made me nuts every time I hear it. There were a lot of people in this country who were terrified by that, made very nervous about it. Something like, I mean, there's a 70% approval rating for this fight before it started that was buoyed in one small part by the fact that at the time the war started, 50% of the people thought that Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi regime was directly responsible for the attacks of September 11th. Now it's 70%. That's pretty fun. The other motivating factor was the fear that Al-Qaeda was going to trundle a nuclear weapon from Iraq into New York or Houston or wherever, blow it up, and that was going to be the end of us. The Al-Qaeda connection was a fabrication so awful that it really you can scarcely describe. And it's also something that, had the mainstream media been doing its job, would have been very, very easy to debunk. Here's the deal. For those of you who are still not aware, Saddam Hussein was a secular leader. He called himself a socialist, for whatever that's worth. He spent 30 years killing every Islamic fundamentalist that he could get his hands on. There were laws on the books requiring death for anyone in Iraq who proselytized for Islamic fundamentalism, particularly the Wahhabi sect practiced by Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. If he had these weapons, which he doesn't, and gave them to Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden would turn around and use them on him first, because they have wanted him dead since the Carter administration. So there goes that. People will argue that, yeah, but they both hate the United States, and so, you know, they make alliances. I said, no. This is blood enemy situations that doesn't have anything to do with the enemy of my enemy is my friend. These hatreds run a lot deeper than any sort of convenient get-together that they could have to come and come after us. Saddam Hussein was many things, many evil things, but he was not stupid. And giving weapons like of any kind to Al-Qaeda would have been suicide. So he wasn't going to do that. As recently as this past February, Osama bin Laden got on television and told the Iraqi people to kill him. Rise up and kill this guy, and then turn around and kill any Americans who happen to show up. They missed on the first part, but they're doing pretty well on the second, unfortunately.
You're listening to William Rivers Pitt speaking in Houston, Texas. We'll be back with him in a minute.
Proclamation. Proclamation.
An aggressive time, a painful time, a time where cynicism rots the vine, and a time where violence blocks the summer shine. Lifetimes go by in a flash, in a search for love, in a search for cash. Everybody wanna be some fat tycoon, everybody wanna be on a tropic honeymoon. Nobody wanna sing a little bit out of tune, or be the backbone of a rebel platoon. It's too soon to step out of line. You might get laughed at, you might get fined, but do you fear me when I say I feel pain every day when I see the way my friends gotta slay and never get ahead of bills they gotta pay? No way, no way. Some make a living doing killing, Colombian penicillin. Some are willing to play the villain, they just chilling to pass the time, pass the information or pass the wine, pass the buck or pass the baton. But you can't pass the police or the Pentagon, the IRS or the upper echelon. I think it's time to make a move on the contradiction. Bomb, bomb, rock the nation, take over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb, the truth shall come, give the corporations a complication. Bomb, bomb, rock
okay.
The nation.
Michael Frane, you are listening to Democracy Now! The War and Peace Report, as we return to William Rivers Pitt, author of War in Iraq, What Team Bush Doesn't Want You to Know, The Greatest Sedition is Silence, 4 Years in America. His latest book is Our Flag 2. William Rivers Pitt is speaking at a fundraiser in Houston, Texas for Pacifica Station KPFT.
Let's talk about the process of the lies. How did this information get out into the public? Well, and this is one of my favorite parts. How many of you have heard of the Office of Special Plans? How many of you have not? Okay. There was an organization put together by Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld within the Department of Defense called the Office of Special Plans. It was not part of the traditional apparatus of the security, of the intelligence community, nor was it subject to any kind of congressional oversight. It was staffed by rank intelligence amateurs, people who had one thing, an ideological denomination that was acceptable to Don Rumsfeld and to Dick Cheney. Over the course of the last several months, basically the purpose of this Office of Special Plans was to cherry-pick information, to take information that was provided by the CIA and State Department, twist it, manipulate it, or flat-out lie about it, and then deliver it to the National Security Council. They were able to eventually supersede the CIA and the State Department and their influence over the intelligence community simply by virtue of the fact that they had Dick Cheney as their sponsor on three different occasions in something that is as unprecedented as if the Pentagon just stood up and walked across the Potomac. The Vice President of the United States of America, Dick Cheney, went down to Langley, down to CIA on three different occasions and browbeat the intelligence analysts there for, quote, forward-leaning intelligence about what was going on in Iraq. When he couldn't go, his assistant Scooter Libby went. Scooter Libby. And on three or four different occasions when neither Cheney nor Scooter could go, Newt Gingrich went as a known emissary of Richard Perle's Defense Policy Board and the Office of Special Plans. Yeah, Newt Gingrich isn't gone. He's still around. How do I know this? How do I know about the Office of Special Plans? How do I know that these guys exist? How do I know that they managed through the patronage of Dick Cheney and to a lesser extent Don Rumsfeld to completely cut state and CIA out of the loop? Because of Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski, among others. Air Force Lieutenant Karen Kwiatkowski was working with the Office of Special Plans, was in that Pentagon division under Undersecretary Douglas Feith, and worked there and saw all of this stuff until her retirement in April. She retired one day in April. The next day in April, she got out and started tearing ass. And I wish I had my notes with me because I could read you directly her words on this matter. But basically, she said that these guys lied to Congress, cut the rest of the intelligence community completely out of the loop, and I saw it all. Wonder why she's not getting a lot of coverage in the mainstream press. She is going to be one of the prime witnesses in whatever sort of bastardized version of an intelligence review that they're going to do in Congress pretty soon now. She'll be up there along with Greg Thielman, along with Joseph Wilson, talking about all this stuff. And by the way, if you want to start a letter-writing campaign to your senators and your representatives, particularly if you have any kind of sway over them at all, I would say that, George, let's do a little horse trading. You can have your $87 billion, George. You can have it, sure. But we're going to have Democrats running the investigation into what happened in your little run-up to the war, and you're also going to get the hell out of the way of the September 11th investigation. Do a little horse trading. Another important witness for the prosecution, a reluctant witness, we had to wrap him in chains and drag him here, was a gentleman named Ahmad Chalabi. Anyone not recognize that name? Ahmad Chalabi was for many years, he was the head of the Iraqi National Congress, a dissident group, quote-unquote, that supposedly wanted to get rid of Saddam Hussein. All these boys in the White House were part of a group that I'm going to be talking about in a minute that very much helped to empower Chalabi and his people to try to do that. They rammed through Congress something called the Iraqi Liberation Act that made the removal of Saddam Hussein a matter of American law and gave millions of taxpayer dollars to Ahmad Chalabi and his group. Ahmad Chalabi was convicted of 32 counts of bank fraud and sentenced to 22 years in absentia in a Jordanian court. Ahmad Chalabi has an Enron resume that would make Ken Lay blush. This is the guy that the Office of Special Plans went to get their information about what was going on in Iraq. And he has no reason to lie. Ahmad Chalabi was their main source for the weapons. Ahmad Chalabi was their main source for the Al-Qaeda connections. Ahmad Chalabi was the guy who said that walking into Iraq and taking over Baghdad and taking over the country would be a cakewalk. It would be no problem. They're going to welcome you with hearts and flowers. Ahmad Chalabi is also, incidentally, one of the main reasons why the mainstream media went on for so long telling these stories about how terrible the weapons are in Iraq and how much they have. Because Ahmad Chalabi was the main source for Judy Miller at the New York Times. How many of you are aware of this one? New York Times is the paper of record for the Western world. Where the New York Times goes, the rest of the media will follow because they will hitch their wagon to the standards at the New York Times, which is still a very good newspaper by comparison. Judy Miller used Ahmad Chalabi as her source. And when the New York Times started running all this stuff about how awful the weapons are in Iraq, the rest of the mainstream media felt compelled and justified to go along for the ride. So that's Ahmad Chalabi, the main source for all of this data, the main source for the Office of Special Plans, who, I will remind you, was completely independent of any of the standards and practices of the intelligence community. The people who staffed that thing had one thing in common. They believed what Don Rumsfeld believed, and they wanted what he wanted, and that's it.
Wasn't Chalabi in London the whole time? He hadn't been to Iraq?
He hasn't been to Iraq since 1956. He's there now. He's on that little governing board that we cobbled together that the UN has decided that they're not going to have anything to do with. Yeah. The UN recently stated flat out that that governing body has absolutely nothing to do with representing the people, and they won't work with it. So that's yet another stone in the way of internationalizing this mess. So that is the first two bits of evidence. We have the data that was put forth, busted to pieces, not true. The process by which these lies were promulgated, and the individuals, Lieutenant, I'm telling you, burn this name into your consciousness, Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski. Remember her name. She's one of the most important people in the country right now. She is an Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, and she saw it all happen. I think that she's probably okay. She's an Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. I wouldn't want to mess with her. So I heard her actually on Pacifica a few weeks ago. KWIATKOWSKI.
Oh, hey,
that's just magic how that happened. Outstanding. I'll be playing the piano before we're done here. Okay. Part of the absolute requirement that you need to prove murder in the first degree is malice aforethought. You can kill somebody in the passion of the moment, and that's manslaughter. But if you plan it, if you think about it, if you lay out a system by which you're going to get it done well beforehand, that is malice aforethought, that is murder in the first degree. Let me introduce you, if you are not aware, to the Office of Special Plans, not the Office of Special Plans, to the Project for a New American Century. Anybody never heard of this? Everybody knows about the project. I just cut about 25 minutes out of my presentation. That's outstanding. I don't know what that's all about. For those of you who are not fully aware, I'm talking to a very intelligent crowd here, I can tell. The Project for New American Century was founded in 1997 by a bunch of holdovers from the godfather of wacky right-wing think tanks, the American Enterprise Institute, one of the scariest groups of people you'll ever have unfortunate cause to meet. The Project for New American Century's whole purpose for being was to change fundamentally the manner in which the United States deals with the world. Much more hyperactive military. Pax Americana is what they called it. In a very, very, very deliberate dig to John F. Kennedy and everyone in this room, it was John F. Kennedy who said during his peace speech, "What kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana enforced upon the world by American weapons of war." That is exactly what we have. And they called it Pax Americana to kind of stick it right in our faces. Pax Americana. First step, 3.8% minimum gross domestic product dumped into the Pentagon budget. Step number two, fight several major theater wars. This is all outlined in a report that they put out in 2000 called Rebuilding America's Defenses. Fight several major theater wars. Not the old, timid, tired, kind of uniquely American, be prepared to fight several major theater wars, but fight several major theater wars. Invade Iraq, take it over, establish a permanent military presence there, and begin knocking off regimes left, right, and center in that region, whether friendly or unfriendly alike. One of the ideological fathers of this happy little crew is a guy named Norman Podhoretz, Norman Podhoretz described this process as, quote, the reformation and modernization of Islam. I'm a Catholic. We call that a crusade. Why is that important? What's the big deal about the Project for the New American Century? Well, wacky right-wing think tanks are a dime a dozen in Washington, D.C., right? They're everywhere. You trip over them walking down the street. Well, if you go to their website, newamericancentury.org, you will see Statement of Principles. You click it, you see the name signed. Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Elliot Abrams, and on and on and on. The guys who are, I'm sorry?
Jeb Bush.
That's too deep for me. That freaks me out. This they signed this thing on June 3rd, 1997. By the way. It's just too much. Basically, the guys running the foreign policy of the United States of America, the military policy, running basically everything that we have to do in the world, are guys from the Project for the New American Century. And if you read their report, Rebuilding America's Defenses from 2000, it is prophetic in describing what it wants and what it has gotten. It wanted 3.8% gross domestic product. That's exactly what they got in Bush's last budget. They wanted several major theater wars. We've got two. And there's a line on page 51 talking about all of these massive changes that they want to do to the military, to the way that we deal with the world. Page 51 says, the transformation we are talking about, and this is an indirect quote, the transformation we are talking about will take a very long time unless some sort of cataclysmic or catalytic event takes place, like another Pearl Harbor. Unquote. September 2000. If you go read George Bush's 2002 foreign policy for the United States, a foreign policy thing for the United States of America, which he put out in September of 2002, it is rebuilding America's defenses. There's a company that you guys might have heard of. I don't know, they're pretty obscure. Halliburton. They have a subsidiary called Kellogg Brown and Root. Kellogg Brown and Root's stock and trade is the building of permanent military bases. They're in Iraq right now, building. There's your permanent military presence. And we're starting to get a little itchy towards Iran. There's your next fight. If you start seeing on your television pictures from 1979 of Americans walking around with bags over their heads, a la the 444-day hostages, you know we're getting ready to go. Because they're grabbing the American people by the guts and scaring them instead of giving them the facts. So just keep an eye out for that. That's the countdown. The clock is running when you see that. So these guys have been thinking about this since 1997. They put Rebuilding America's Defenses out in 2000. And now in 2003, every single thing that that report asked for, it has gotten. Now, you can take that Pearl Harbor thing two ways. You can really kind of have the bury your head under your covers and never leave your house because they knew this thing was coming and they let it happen on purpose perspective. Or you can have your, they are the most opportunistic pack of SOBs that has ever lived because they saw this thing come down and rushed their insane, ideologically ridiculous platform out before the American people, and it was the only alternative we had because they were the only ones doing the talking. They used September 11th against you. Now, one of the things that strikes me about this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think about John Kennedy during his term in office dealing with the Cold War when it was a very hot fight. Now, John Kennedy was no foreign policy prince. This guy pulled stuff that would make Richard Pearl blush, you know? But one thing that John Kennedy understood and tried to live by as much as possible was that in the struggle with communism and all of that stuff, it was not just enough to be able to defeat your enemy by force of arms. That's not going to get it done. You have to give the people who could conceivably fall under that other sphere a reason beyond fear and bombs and bayonets and guns to come with you instead of with the other guy. Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and all those guys, they're thugs. All right? They're a protection racket that uses terrorism instead of Tommy guns. They are. There's nothing noble about them. But they are heroes to many people in the Muslim world. Not because of what they do, but because of what we do. When we go and bulldoze into Iraq on a pack of lies, we become the greatest recruiting poster that Al-Qaeda ever had. And that is the final failure of these Project for the New American Century guys. They are not trying to show. There is a lot of things wrong with this country. Anybody who stands up and says America is the best country in the world, we're the most noble and righteous, blah, 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 is missing a few extra chapters that they haven't quite read yet. But the idea that we're based upon and what we can be when we are at our best is about as good as it gets. And if we bring that face to the world, to the international community, we will do far more in this war on terror than all the bombs and all the guns and all the bunker busters and all the wars that we could ever possibly hope for. If we keep going the way we're going, we are going to create a pissed off tide of humanity that will bury us. Period. So that's malice aforethought. They've been planning it for years. And they got their Pearl Harbor. And that is kind of the next level to this whole thing. The idea, the fundamental truth, that they used September 11th against you, against all of us. I was just in New York, and man, I gotta tell you, you would think, considering that New York was the place that really bore the brunt of what happened on September 11th, that they would still be kind of freaked out, scared, worried, timid. Nah. It's New York City. There are about 250,000 people already getting ready to show up this time next summer at the GOP's convention over there. This administration is going to rue the day. They decided it was a good idea to stand upon the bones of the people that they have used and launch their 2004 election campaign. I hope all of you will try to show up. I'm going to be there. It is going to be well worth the price of admission. It's a terrible thing to say. They used September 11th against us. What kind of a bastard would say that about our great President George W. Bush? Well, there's one thing that jumps right off the... That statement of principles on the Project for New American Century page I was telling you about, there's one signature that's notably absent. George's. It's not there. Well, he can't. I just think, I think fundamentally blaming George Bush, this is the witness, this is the prosecution, and the man is holding the office, and so we hold him accountable because Harry Truman said the buck stops here, and he did stand up there with his hand all shaken and sign the oath in the rain back then, if y'all remember that fun day. But blaming him for the stuff that his administration is doing is a lot like blaming Mickey Mouse when Disney screws up. There's just no connection between who he is and what is happening. But he is the man. He is the man who stood up before the American people time after time after time after time and invoked September 11th two or three sentences after talking about going to war in Iraq. I met a wonderful woman in New York on Friday named Kelly Campbell, one of the founding members of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. Just a great group. And she got up in the Riverside Church in New York City where Martin Luther King spoke, where Bobby Kennedy spoke, and said, "How dare they use my dead family members and the dead family members of all the other people in this organization and all the other dead family members who lost people on September 11th, how dare they use those people to lie their way into a war? That is as criminal as anything I've ever heard of." But it's a terrible thing to say. They used it against us. They used it for... George is sitting up in the White House saying, I'd like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And 30,000 people died. Give me my sandwich. They used it for everything. October 4th, 2001. That pall of poison smoke is still floating around New York City. And George stands up, quote, we have to counteract the shockwave of the evildoer by thinking about accelerating individual rate cuts and thinking about tax rebates. Unquote. That's funny, but it's also going to barf on myself sick. What the hell does that have to do with September 11th? What does it have to do with protecting us? What does it have to do with making sure something like that never happens again? It doesn't have a damn thing to do with it. Nothing they've done has a damn thing to do with it. This administration is a smash and grab robbery writ large. That is their whole reason for being. They saw all of that money sitting in the Treasury and they said, I want it. And now they got it. $87 billion. We got Dick Cheney out today saying, probably going to need more. Don Rumsfeld says the other day that it's... Don Rumsfeld says the other day that it's up to the Iraqis to rebuild their country. Where's the money going? You know? Where's the $87 million going? It's going to Halliburton. It's going to Brown & Root. It's going to all of the defense contractors. Dick Cheney's still pulling a $1 million annual check from Halliburton. A deferred retirement benefit. In Boston, we call that a paycheck.
William Rivers Pitt, author of Our Flag 2, The Paradox of Patriotism, and The Greatest Sedition is Silence, 4 Years in America. You're listening to Democracy Now! Back with William Rivers Pitt in a minute.
Fire! Radioactive! Michael Franti, Legacy and LZ in the place. Gone International with Sly and Robbie on the track. Drums and bass. We getting wild. Check just the last word. I don't understand the whole reason why you're telling us all that we need to unify. Rally round the flag and beat the drums of war. Sing the same old songs. We heard them all before. Telling me it's unpatriotic, but I call it when I see it. When I see it's idiotic, the tears of one mother are the same as any other. Drop food on your kids while you're murdering the fathers. But don't bother to show it on CNN. Brothers and sisters, don't believe them that it's a war against evil. It's really just revenge engaged on the poorest by the same rich men. Fight terrorists wherever they be found. But why you not bombing Tim McVeigh's hometown? You can say what you want, propaganda television, but all bombing. It's terrorism. Chase down all our enemies. We can bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces. But we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa, we may even find
the... Bomb the world. Michael Franti here on Democracy Now! The War and Peace Report. As we return to William Rivers Pitt speaking in Houston, Texas.
I don't know if it was Bill Clinton or it was John Kerry I saw on television the other day. It says the best jobs program I can think of is to unemploy one more person in November of 2004. But the important part about this, well, that's kind of funny. The tax quote is hilarious. But the important part about this, and the part that you should not ever forget, take with you, talk to people about it, because it is the beginning and the end of how we get out from under this mess. They used it against you. They made you afraid every single day. And you're a savvy group of people. I walk into a room and say, Project for the New American Century, and every head in the room goes, uh-huh. That's a savvy group of people. And I'll bet that some of you have spent a lot of time in the last couple of years being afraid. You're stupid enough to turn on CNN for an hour or two, you're terrified. Because that's their job. That's what they do. CNN's viewership went up 500% on September 11th. Somebody figured something out in the marketing department, you know? The single greatest victory, the beginning of victory and the end victory, that you and your friends and your family members and everybody that you know can achieve in this particular situation is simply to stop being afraid. Don't let them scare you. It is fear that has allowed them to get away with everything that they've gotten away with. It is fear that has greased the skids for this smash and grab robbery. When I say they used September 11th, brother, go and look at the quotes that these guys bandied about day after day after day after day. The television footage, the 45 minutes they're going to go and blow it up. The Dick Cheney sitting on some, I think it was one of the Tim Russert show, pointing a direct finger at a rock. And now it's the core mission of the fight on terrorism. Doesn't have anything to do with it. It has to do with you being afraid and them getting paid. That's it. So if you can make it your core mission, on top of being informed, on top of knowing what's going on, to simply not allow them to have that power over you, they are finished, because that's all they got going. That's it. Now, the last bit of evidence for the prosecution would be the profit motive. We have the ideology, the Project for a New American Century guys, all that, sitting there saying, we have to, I mean, a large, here's something that's really important, and it's probably the most difficult part of this entire thing. And they couldn't have planned this any better if they tried. Now, the single most common thing to see within the progressive community is two people who agree with each other on 99% of the issues screaming and furious at each other. Happens way too often. And one of the main places where this happens, this just huge rift right down the middle of the progressive community, is this awful question of what's going on between Israel and Palestine. Now, I am not here to espouse for one side or the other in that particular situation, other than to say, place would blow up. Other than to say this, the central core mission for the Project of the New American Century, over and above getting to the oil and over and above getting paid, is that they think that by waging full theater warfare on the entire Middle East, they will be defending Israel. That's their main goal. Some of us might argue that they will be doing exactly the opposite. If they go declare theater-wide war upon the entire Middle East, they will put Israel in more danger than you could possibly imagine. If you're an advocate for Israel, that should scare you. If you're an advocate for the Palestinians, that should scare you even more, because it'll be the Palestinians who bear the brunt of whatever happens after Israel gets all these bombs dropped on it. But the point is basically that it is the hardest thing within the progressive community to talk about this subject without having people freak out. And we need to fix that. You cannot talk about the Bush administration without talking about the Project for the New American Century. And you cannot talk about the project without talking about Israel. And if you can't talk about Israel, you might as well just hang it up. So there's the ideology, and that's all good, but there's also the payout. Halliburton is making billions and billions and billions of dollars off of this. Brown & Root, their subsidiary, is building away. There's also, you ever heard of a company called United Defense out of Arlington, Virginia? How many have not? United Defense out of Arlington, Virginia is a weapons manufacturer. They are the prime providers of just about every rolling piece of equipment, the Bradley fighting vehicle, the Paladin, the Scout, the Crusader. Everything that we use in a war, they make, and the Defense Department buys. They also make all the missiles that we shoot off of all the carriers and all of the destroyers and all the rest of it. Who owns United Defense? The Carlyle Group. Ha ha ha. I just saw the gentleman in the front row here with eyes roll up in his head. Yeah. Who works for the Carlyle Group? George Herbert Walker Bush, along with Carlucci and Baker of Baker Botts, who I should add. Baker Botts are the attorneys of record for Saudi Arabia against the lawsuit by the September 11th families. James Baker and Baker Botts, his firm. The Saudis have acquired them as their attorneys against the families who are suing Saudi Arabia for what happened.
Not good.
So let's break it down. We were told that all these weapons were here. That's a lie. Told specifically about nuclear weapons from Niger. A lie. A lie so profound that Tenet got publicly embarrassed on the pages of the Washington Post the day after he fell on the sword. Thank you, Walter Pincus. All this information is still up on that website. No Al-Qaeda connections until now. Now that Hussein is gone, they're all flooding in because there are no borders anymore. There used to be. Now we've also got this marvelous situation where the Shiites and the Sunnis are getting ready to go to each other's throats in a religious civil war that will make Rwanda look like a picnic if it gets out of hand. Yeah. And we'll throw the Kurds in too, and the Turks when they come roll down to get the oil fields in Mosul. It's going to be a party for everybody. It's going to be great. We have the Office of Special Plans. We have Karen Kwiatkowski, Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski. We have Joseph Wilson. We have Greg Thielman. We have individual after individual after individual who has come forward to talk about this stuff. We have Ahmad Chalabi. We have Dick Cheney, Scooter Libby, and Newt Gingrich going down to browbeat the CIA to get forward-leaning intelligence. Okay? We have the Project for a New American Century, who are still stupid enough to leave their paperwork up on the website. It's right there. That line about Pearl Harbor, page 51, it's right there. Malice aforethought. They planned this years ago. And the guys who planned it in 97, 98, 99, and 2000 and wrote about it are now running things from top to bottom. Dick Cheney is the president of the United States, guys. Just cope with that. That's the deal. The fact that they use September 11th to push every manner of whacked out, ideologically nut job policy, up in tax policy, war policy, you name it, they asked for it because of September 11th. And far too often, we gave it to them. And the Patriot Act. Oh, my God. The Patriot Act had been written years before. The Homeland Security Act. Did you all know there's a few line items in the Homeland Security Act that a lot of people aren't aware of? Such as, well, I'm sure you've heard of the Total Information Awareness Database. The thing which will harvest virtually any kind of data there is about you. Your grades, your religion, where you shop, where you surf the web, anything. If you paid for something with a credit card, it's going to be there. The property you own, the places you go on vacation, everything. Supposed to be run by a guy named John Poindexter. John Poindexter was convicted of lying to Congress and destruction of evidence in the Iran-Contra scandal. They put him in charge of this massive harvesting thing to get all the information in the world about you. We've got Armitage back with the same. This whole administration is just a rehabilitation clinic for former criminals. I love it. It's really. If I were an artist, I would probably be the only artist in the world who is actively trying to destroy his muse. It's very strange. They give me no end of stuff to write about, you know. And I'm gonna have to go back to teaching when these guys finally get run out of town on a rail, which I look forward to very much. There is also within the Homeland Security Act the annihilation of the Freedom of Information Act. It basically doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't have any teeth. And I ask you, I mean, it's so extreme that you can't even get a copy of the Patriot Act to read it because it's against national security to give you the Patriot Act to read so you can find out what it's about. But we know enough about Section 213 of the Patriot Act. Are you aware of that happy little section? Section 213 of the Patriot Act, legal scholars have termed this the sneak and peek provision. They can come into your house, they can search your stuff, they can bug your phone, they can bug your computer, and they can walk out the door without serving you a warrant or ever letting you know they were there. How much of the Constitution is left behind in the wake of that? One little section of that very large bill. Another neat part about the Homeland Security Act is that it... You ever heard of thimerosal? Thimerosal is a mercury-based preservative that they what the hell is the name of that? What's the
Eli Lilly.
Eli Lilly. Thank you. I'm flaking out up here. It's very hot. Eli Lilly, a mercury-based preservative that went into children's vaccines produced by Eli Lilly. A great, great, great many people whose children are now autistic blame the mercury-based Thimerosal preservative for having caused that autism. Line in the Homeland Security Defense Act says that nobody can sue Eli Lilly on this basis because they're making bioweapons vaccines. That has a lot to do with Homeland Security, especially if your kid, especially with your kid is autistic. Entirely fair. Who's the Bill Frist? Right, he's the Senate Majority Leader. His entire career was pushed forward by Eli Lilly. Like they published his book. So that's the Homeland Security Act, between the offices, between the Freedom of Information Act, the Total Information Awareness Database, and this nauseating little subsection about Eli Lilly. People should have the opportunity to sue to find out if there is a legal basis for these claims. Not in George Bush's America. Yeah. That doesn't fly anymore. And then, of course, finally, at the end of it, there is the profit motive. How many billions and billions of dollars that belongs to you are these boys going to walk away with? They don't even have to win in 2004. They're done. You know, they're finished. They are all through. They have done what they came to do. Except for catching Osama bin Laden and catching Saddam Hussein, that is. So if I were the prosecuting attorney, that would be the opening statement for the people versus George W. Bush et al. If you were a jury, ladies and gentlemen, innocent or guilty?
William Rivers Pitt from truthout.com, author of a number of books, War in Iraq, What Team Bush Doesn't Want You to Know, a book he wrote with Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons inspector, his latest, Our Flag 2, The Paradox of Patriotism, and the book that he is traveling around the country talking about, The Greatest Act of Sedition is Silence. And that does it for today's program. If you'd like to get more information, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. You can also sign up there for our daily digest, the latest information and articles from our website. You can go to the website and get contact information on groups. And also, if you'd like to get a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. Democracy Now! Is produced by an amazing group of people. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke and Sharif Abdel Qaddous, Pervez Sharma, Jeremy Scahill, Anna Noguera, Elizabeth Press. Special thanks also to Uri Galed and Johnny Sender, Simba Russo and John Randolph, Mike DeFilippo and Rich Kim, Jenny Filippazzo, and also thanks to Otis McClay in KPFT Houston. Also thanks to Karen Renucci and Dennis Moynihan as well. Again, our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman as we go out with Michael Franti. Thank you for joining us.
You say you're sorry. There is no other choice. God bless the